So here it is, our first English language Helium talk. We recorded this in the morning before the opening of our group show, The Jaunt. I spoke to Jeroen Smeets, the founder of this wonderful art project. The Jaunt is based in Copenhagen and sends artists on trips to destinations they haven't been before, without an agenda or a briefing, simply to get inspiration and hopefully discover new things. Jeroen and I talked about the concept and the mission of The Jaunt and the fascination of this truly international project. We talk about artists that we both share an interest in, about making and selling print editions, and of course our joint exhibition here at Helium Cowboy that features work by Highland Mather, Morky, aka Corleone, Christian Texera, Tim Biskup, Laura Berger, Vincent de Boer, and Troy Lovegates. Well, Troy's work hadn't made it to Hamburg when we had this talk. It was still stuck in customs, and unfortunately, we had to install this exhibition without it at first.
Helium Talk.
I hope you like the English version of Helium Talk. I'm not a native speaker, and listening to the interview, I recognized some things that I have to work on for the upcoming podcast. But hey, this is our debut, and while I still cannot pronounce his name properly, Jeroen Smeets has been a fantastic guest for this premiere. Of course, we'll also continue to do German podcasts. But as I said before, I'm curious in hearing the stories of so many people still, that language cannot be in the way. Next on here will be Björn Holzweg in German. And that one will be followed by another English Helium talk with Highland Mather, an artist from the United States and the owner of Andenken Gallery, which is located in Amsterdam, and whom I spoke to in the morning after the opening of The Jaunt Show.
Helium talk. Helium talk.
Right at the beginning, let's get this thing out of the way with the name, right?
My Dutch name?
Yeah, your real name, the one.
My Dutch name is Jeroen Smeets. It's unpronounceable in any other language than Dutch.
Yeah, so I will not use it unless we figure out I can actually pronounce it very well when I say it in an angry way, right?
Yeah, your angry Jeroen is good.
We're in early morning, and even though it's actually a day to be very angry. I'm not angry at you.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. But yeah, it's not a happy morning when I read the news this morning.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. All right. That's political podcast we do in next year, I think.
Yeah. Let's.
For now, it's like I've invited you here to Helium Cowboy and to the gallery to do a show with your project, The Jaunt, which is in a nutshell sending artists to their favorite destinations or a destination they want to go to?
Not per se their favorite. Mm. Sometimes we send artists to places where they don't know anything about or they don't even know where they're going. Mm-hmm. It's always a place that they've never been to before. And the aim of the trip is always just to find new inspiration. There's no agenda, there's no briefing. We just book a ticket and book a accommodation and the artist does whatever he or she wants to do.
But they pick... The artist picks the location, or do you make
sometimes
suggestions?
Yeah, we make suggestions, they come with suggestions, and then like some artists already pick places we've been to before, so it's always in conversation. Sure. We never send an artist to a place they absolutely do not want to go. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
and then they bring back inspiration, but in form of a print.
Yeah, once the artist is back and they create an artwork, which we produce prints of. Yeah. And sometimes it depends on the artist. Sometimes the artist works on location already and starts painting or drawing right away. And sometimes they wait until they come back to their studio to create their work. And so that differs.
So and the print is basically financing for the trips or?
Yeah. So how we do it actually is we announce that in 3 or 4 weeks' time we're sending an artist to a destination, and then people can order the print already at sight unseen. So you don't know what the print's going to look like. You only know which artist is going where. And then by ordering the print, you're supporting the trip. You're supporting the artist going on the trip. And that's how we fund the whole project.
How do you find the artist?
A lot. In the beginning, it all went through my own network and artists that I had worked with before and I think the general line is always artists that I admire for their work and or their person. I try to keep it to, or try explaining it as that I see all the artists have to share the same creative energy, mm-hmm. While also still working in a lot of different styles. But the bottom line is I always like the artist and would like an artwork from them up on my wall.
So, but it's not tied to any kind of art scene or art movement or style or?
No, not particularly. I think a lot share sort of a do-it-yourself background, either from just homeschooled, like mm-hmm. illustration kind of stuff, yeah. or more coming more from a graffiti and street background. But it's not a given. That's not a criteria.
How long is this project going on, and how many artists did you send out on trips?
We started in 2013, so 5 years ago. It's been running for 5 years now, and we have sent 43 artists on trip. Our next one is going in a week and a half, number 44.
When you say we, you mean?
The Royal Eye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I do that here all the time. We at Helium Cowboy.
Yeah,
a lot of
yeah.
in the past. Yeah.
Me and yeah. and the other me's.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but I think that's it's basically, we met, you came in here last year when we did our exhibition in Cowboyland, and you introduced the project to me.
And we shared a few artists that we've worked with, like David Schillinglaw and mm-hmm. Andrea Wan.
So there was some kind of connection, and then we quickly decided to present the project here in Hamburg with originals of mm-hmm. a selection of artists. But I think that's the connection that I am personally always looking for in art. Is there's somebody who has a good idea, mm-hmm. and he pushes it through, basically often against common sense. At least from a financial sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after sort of a while, it becomes this. It becomes this very valuable thing for an art scene that that can only sort of live through new ideas mm-hmm. and other ideas. And me personally, I'm exploring ideas outside of the gallery context. Sort of basically since I've started it, because
of
never
course.
Started as a,
yeah.
as a normal gallery. But this travel, the idea of sending artists on these trips, like on short residencies.
Yeah, it's kind of sort of mini residencies.
Yeah, super appealing, So.
Yeah,
and you just came up with the idea because you like to travel and you like arts, or?
Well, I come from a background where I work with art projects and galleries myself as well. And then before that, I was working as editor-in-chief of a skateboard culture magazine from the Netherlands.
Okay, what was it called?
It was called Reload magazine. And then back there is where I really started working together mm-hmm. with artists in a commercial way. Like we always had an artist on the cover of the magazine. So I would start briefing artists and also interviewing a lot of artists. Mm-hmm. And especially back then I was doing a lot of interviews and for different magazines. And the conversation of travel just always came up. And either artists just came back from a trip and were really inspired and made a whole new body of work because of that, or they were longing to go on the trip mm-hmm. but didn't have the finances to do so. So that just sat in the back of my head. And I think just talking with a lot of different people about it, crowdfunding just came about on art-related projects. Mm-hmm. Before it was a lot of like tech projects, and now it was more coming into the art scene as well. Put all of that together, and then I think I sat on the idea for like close to a year before we actually like tied the knot and started doing it. Mm-hmm. And then on the very first trip, I worked with a good friend of mine who had exhibited before, and we only sent it out to friends and family because I had no clue if people were gonna buy artwork that had not been made yet, and they didn't know what it was gonna look like. But we were very fortunate to sell out right away. So we sold all 50 prints of the first trip. And
who was the first print? The first trip?
That was Hadoff, or Hadoff, as he says it himself. And he's a good friend of mine from the Netherlands, from Breda. Mm-hmm. And he's actually just been on a second trip like 2 months ago. And we've been running ever since.
So artists might go on second trips?
Yeah, we started that last year, calling it a John alumni trip. Because, we've worked with over 40 artists now, mm-hmm. and some of them have really grown and are doing amazing things. And I really like to work with them again. So why not? Yeah, so we started doing that. It's a John alumni project. And And in that project, we send artists on a trip without them knowing where they're going. So I'll book a ticket for them. They have no clue where they're going to go. On the day that they're leaving, they'll be able to open up an envelope and get instructions on which gate to go to and where they're going to go and where they're going to stay. Yeah.
Has anyone ever complained?
No, luckily not. No. But we've only done that like 3 times now. Yeah. This jungle alumni format. Yeah. Yeah. But it's in a way, like also having done 50 or like 40 plus trips, mm-hmm. Maybe in the future I'll only do joint alumni sort of trips where we have trips where artists don't know where they're going. Mm-hmm. But it takes a lot of trust from the artist side towards me, especially artists that I've never worked with.
Yeah.
So for now it works with the alumni artists because they know that I'll provide for a good trip and they'll have a good time.
It's definitely a nice concept to, you know, if you think what a good place for these artists could be. Sometimes it may not be a fit though.
No, and that's like, I personally think even if you're in a place where it's going to be really boring maybe, mm-hmm. or you're not going to enjoy it, I mean, it'll still be inspirational.
Yeah.
It won't be happy inspiration, but I mean, still inspiration.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, you know, but that's probably a very rare case where you send somebody to a place where he has nightmarish memories, you know. But then you could still cancel. You know?
I mean, you could still make an artwork out of that.
Yeah,
of course,
yeah, sure. So. But the question is whether you want to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So you just mentioned a couple of artists. I think both of the artists that are on your website, thejohn.net, where you can find all these trips, a lot of these artists are known. You know, and but some of them, of course, have, you know, probably also grown in the past years. Mm-hmm. What are artists that you think were kind of not highlights in terms that this artist is better than the other, but in terms of that they've, you know, gone on to make big careers?
In that sense,
already on the way, you know, so I'm not saying John was the trigger.
Well, I wouldn't want to call the jaunt the trigger for any artist and for anybody's career, but I think in that light that Colin van der Sluis, a Dutch mm-hmm. artist from Maastricht, is...
so great you can pronounce all these names, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe Colin some background. Van der Sluis. You're originally from the Netherlands and you live in
Copenhagen nowadays. So. Yeah. But he's been working a lot and a long time as an artist. Mm-hmm. And over the last few years, like, it seems like all the puzzle pieces has fallen together. Mm-hmm. He's been showing a lot with the gallery called Vertical Gallery in Chicago, mm-hmm. where we've done a group show as well a couple of years ago. And I think he's, like, the shows that he had there have all been sold out shows. And I think he's doing really well. And I'm just glad that we've been able to work together with him while these puzzle pieces were falling together. Yeah.
Yeah. We have some of the, you know, I mean, David Schillinglow is quite well known. Tim Biskup that we're having mm-hmm. in this show actually is quite well known. Actually, with David, I'm happy that he's not part of this show because he will be part of next group show in May. So
perfect. He was actually, it was like the first group show that we've done was in Vertical Gallery in Chicago, and he was part of that show.
Yeah.
So I wanted to bring 8 new artists. So mm-hmm. unfortunately, he didn't fit the criteria, but he's an amazing guy. Actually, I met him 2 weeks ago in London.
Yeah.
And
he's a good guy. Really fun guy. When he was showing with us in 2015.
He'll be great for a podcast because he won't
stop talking. Yeah, I know. I don't have to do any work.
No.
I just push the button start and then...
Exactly.
No, I enjoyed him having him here. Yeah, well, you mentioned that you've already done an exhibition with another gallery, the Jaunt. I think that's a very nice. That's why I was so easily convinced last year that this mm-hmm. is a good thing to present these kind of projects. And I think that could also be part of your prospects in over the next years to you know, probably go on a trip, have an artist go on a trip, and then have an exhibition there.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of that week.
It's a little bit difficult with artists and trips because you need to have an artist that is able to produce an X amount of work in that period of time.
Oh no, maybe just that he's there. But, you know,
yeah.
It doesn't have to work for the exhibition, but I think it's a nice thing to just have probably an artist talk at the opening. And
true.
Say, so how was your week?
Yeah.
You know?
But at the same time, I really enjoy, and I think the artists enjoy it as well, that the trips that we do, that there's no agenda, there's no briefing. And I think in that setting,
nothing at the end.
It works the best that you find the most inspiration, because there's nothing that you need to do or need to worry about. Some some people are good at speaking, some people are not so good, and then I don't know, they'd be nervous or worried before. And so I really enjoy that the trip is just a trip. That's it. They don't have to worry about anything. And but at the same time, doing these exhibitions is great because it allows me to show more work than just a print, and more creative output. And it's also for me the chance to travel, because I don't get to go on the trips with the artists.
Yeah, it was just one of the questions forming in my mind. And how do you feel with sending everyone off on vacation and you just?
I'm fine. Like I would love to, but at the same time, I'm very okay with not going on 10 trips a year.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'd be, I'm sure I'd be welcome, but I wouldn't feel welcome. I feel like I'd be looking over the shoulder, or plus if I'm in a place where I've never been, I would want to see things, and that might not be the same as the artist. So I'd be of an influence, and I just don't want to be that.
What are your preferred travel destinations?
I still would want to go to South Africa a lot. For whatever reason, Baku in Azerbaijan has been on my list, because I just don't know anything about it. I would love to go back to Seoul in South Korea. I've only been there once for 48 hours, so
I've been there once for 4 days or so, 3 days, but that's like, I don't know, so long ago.
Yeah. I think it's an amazing place. And actually, we had an artist.
Yeah.
Who went to Seoul, and that was in, he was number 11, so that must have been like 2014. And he actually met a girl there, and they're together now, and he emigrated to Seoul. He's living in South Korea. So I guess maybe as part of an influence on an artist, like that might be actually the biggest one.
Yeah, talking of stories, it's another good point. You come back, basically all the artists come back, not just with inspiration, but also with stories. Do you record those someplace? You have a book out?
So the artists, while they're on the trip, they keep a travel diary, and we publish that online as a blog through our website and social media. And then back in 2014, after the first 10 trips, we published our first book. Which is a record of the 10 trips that we've done up to then. So stories of the artists, interviews with them, and sketches of their work, and photos that they've taken on their trip. I think the storytelling is another part that really separates our project from other projects, because it's such a rich storytelling.
Does every artist have kind of, stories? Is there sometimes, some comes back and says, well, I've seen it all, but
everybody has stories. It depends on the person, how they communicate about those stories. Like some really are very expressive, and others keep it more to their sketches and their sketchbook, and they don't talk as much about what they've seen and how they interpret it themselves. And so it depends on the person. But for me, I think the travel diary is actually one of the most interesting parts now. Like I'm almost see the prints that they make sort of as like the postcard that they send back. But the real magic for me happens on the trip. And I especially have it when an artist goes to a place that I've been to myself as well. Sometimes you see that they've walked down the same street, and then it's very interesting for me to see what catches their eye and what they take a photo of, and like how that's different from what I'm experiencing while we're like in the same location on the same, we've got the same thing in front of us, and it connects in different ways. So that's one of the most interesting parts for me, I think, now.
And there could also be a political element in the trips you choose by social political element, making creating awareness for certain regions and spaces. What are the most exotic places you had?
We sent one artist to Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia, and that was during
who
the
was that?
That was Louis Reit, Dutch artist, number 17. And he traveled there in the beginning or mid-September, just around the same time that the Ethiopian New Year is. So he had the New Year celebration in Ethiopia there. I think he had an amazing time there. Exotic locations. We've been to like Newfoundland in Canada, which is like a small island off the east coast of Canada, where Chris and Texera went. We've been, we've been to so many places by now. We haven't been on tropical islands, or we've been to one island off the coast of Croatia, which is a small island where it's like a whole, basically the whole island is a nature park. So the artist was just there enjoying nature, and just he rented a bike and just was able to bike around the whole island. We've had a lot of artists. Like, I think it was last year, we're like five or six of the eight trips that we've done were all islands. One went to an small island, I forgot the name of, but in Norway is an island with like 500, 600 people living on the island. And the artist loved fishing. His name is Job Wouters. And so he wanted to go to a place where he could fish. He brought like his fishing rods. What are they? Fishing rods. He put up an ad in the local supermarket with that he painted himself. And he's like, I want to go out on the sea and fish. So if anybody has a boat, let me know. And then whatever I catch, you can have yourself. And then he got a call from one of the locals there who went out that evening. He joined them on the boat and they caught fish, and he went home with them and had dinner with them. Nice. And I think that was also just an amazing story. I wouldn't call it an exotic location in Norway, but it's not so much about the place of the location, but it's it's about the connection with the connection. With the people. And
where did Cleon Petersen go?
Cleon Petersen went to Athens, Greece. Okay. He was always been a big fan of Never Had Been. And I think his work translated like really, really well from the work that he makes to the connection of Athens, Greece and the Roman, the olden times.
Yeah,
and
looking at his work, I would have expected him to have that he's traveled Greece a lot.
This was the first time. Yeah, so very happy with that as well.
When was that?
That was trip number 12. So that was, I think, in January or February of 15, I guess.
Okay. So now he's gotten really big. You think you could convince him to take an alumni trip?
We've been talking, but there's no dates set. His agenda is so crazy right now that it's, I think if we were to really have to set a date, it'd have to be like 2 years from now.
Interesting aspect of artists' lives that, you know, sort of most artists that we work with or we know, and it's kind of like, you know, there are similar artists that we work with, or, you know, sometimes the same artist, that even though art, being an artist, is actually a very free job, where you're more professional, where you don't have a fixed schedule, to, you know, always booked out these days.
But at the same time, once like things start happening and you're high in demand, then your agenda can just fill up.
Yeah, but even if you're not like so super well-known, artists have to, you know, sort of do shows all the time everywhere. And, you know, that's one of the pressures, but also one of the beautiful things of being an artist, probably. So I think the whole travel idea ties in perfectly into the education of an artist. And I call this education, no matter if you're 60 as an artist, I think is important. For me, it is important that artists basically never stop to learn and experience new stuff.
Exactly.
I think that's part of what makes a great artist. Yeah. Although, I mean, I'm pretty sure there are artists that have found something that they can continue doing forever, and it still has a lot of...
But still, like...
super attractive.
You never should stop educating yourself. Yeah. There's always... I think a great artist will always have a thirst for knowledge and a thirst for new insights and being able to incorporate that back into his or her work.
So if you're asking an artist, you say, I want to take part in a John trip. And then the artist says, well, but I only stay in 5-star hotel and I fly business. Just make a very expensive trip. Or
hasn't happened yet, luckily. I don't know. I mean, we don't have the money for that.
Yeah.
So then that would be the challenge to stay at a hostel with, like, in a dorm room.
Yeah, that's right. I just find a place where there's no 5-star hotel.
Yeah, yeah. I think because, like, the artist has, like, we talk and discuss about where to go and how to go. And I don't think, like, we have a set price point. Like all the prints that we're selling before the trip are always 60 euros.
Okay.
And I think the artist that wants to stay in 5-stars hotels and fly private, they would never sell prints for 60 euros anymore.
No,
so I think right there, we're not a match.
Mm-hmm.
But if they will, I'm up for the challenge for putting them in a dorm room hostel.
I'll send you my, travel itinerary. I'll take the wife and kids. The refinancing of the trips via the prints, I think it's a smart concept. But where, because selling prints from country to country and from artist to artist is totally different. I think here in Germany, we're not necessarily a country where a lot of people, a lot of artists can produce prints and and make money off it. Also, we as a gallery rarely do prints just on very special occasions. So what's your clientele? Where do you find the buyers for the prints?
I think right now our most important country is the States.
Mm-hmm.
I think about 50% of everything we sell goes to the States, taken over a whole year, because it depends from artist to artist. Like, but in that sense, I am aware of where the markets of the artists are that we work with, and kind of try to diversify that, so we try and sort of cover the whole map.
Mm-hmm.
But lately, I have been focusing more on the States because it's, I don't know, American people just seem to spend money more easily on a print, and it's more normal to them, whereas opposed to in some countries here, or even in the Netherlands, or maybe here in Germany as well. Like, we sell here, and like, I'm from the Netherlands, so we have a good base there.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's a different like discussion in their own house, like with maybe with themselves or with their bank account or with their wife or girlfriend, like, should we buy this print for 60 euros? And I don't know, I feel like Americans are just like, oh, I like it, buy it, boom, done.
Yeah, it's also something that is, I mean, I had this discussion yesterday with Melvin, you know, my son, when we were here after we set up the show and everything, and we went through the pieces and we both enjoyed the work here. And then I said something a bit provocative. I said, I'm not, I mean, Melvin already has a couple of prints in his place for a 20-year-old. I think that's already has a decent collection, but that has got to do a lot with his name.
Yeah.
Melvin, which comes from the Melvins, and that's one of my favorite bands in my youth. And so I started buying him Melvin prints when I could get hold of them.
Yeah.
So he's got a couple of those, but he's really into prints, and it's an age thing also, because he likes prints. For me, it's like, I like to buy originals.
It's an age and a budget thing as well.
What I said yesterday is like, prints take up too much wall space for me.
Mm-hmm.
But that collecting, I got a couple of prints here that are they're still in the rolls.
Yeah.
You know, this, because some of these prints, I just like to collect them, not for a value that they may get, but there may be an opportunity to look at them. And sometimes it's just nice to have the original.
Tons of prints at home that will probably never be up on the wall, but I still want to have them because I think they're beautiful, or because I want to support the artist. And it's a combination, but it's not about resale value or something. Sometimes you just really want to own it. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, but I think that's the part where I think here that's where the understanding of buying prints is not necessarily, that's not necessarily the part in Germany, the aspect of Germany. Whereas I feel that, or I have the feeling that in the United States, prints are also just bought because you build up a collection of prints. I mean, if you look at, some of the artists that make prints, we talked about this, they're basically printing their own money. They're releasing an edition of 150, 450, bringing them out on a certain point of time, and 5 minutes later, they're all sold, like Cleon Peterson or Shepard Fairey. The London Police
Did weekly prints, I believe.
And that's, I don't think that people buy them to hang them, but I think also think that people just.
You want to be a part of it as well. Yeah. And especially with somebody like Shepard Fairey, who's like a cultural icon and has got his own place in history in what this scene, like, you want to be a part of that somehow. And also at the price point of prints, you can
be a part of that.
You can be a part of it, and you can be an extensive part of that, because you don't have to just, like, you can buy a couple of them and you can rotate as well. Like, all the prints that we make with the John, like, I have at home, of course. So I have one frame hanging in the office, and every time there's a new print, I just put up the new print.
Okay.
And then that's how I rotate at home. So it's, with prints, it's just accessible for people. Yeah.
But the John would also work with a subscription, right?
Yeah, we have an ambassador program where we have we offer the chance to become a joint ambassador, and then you get so we do 8 print trips a year. You get 8 prints for the, and you pay for the whole year, get a good price on it, and we have usually between 5 and 10 people per year that have that, but they don't even know which artists are gonna go yet.
But they're collecting the jaunt.
Yeah, they're collecting the jaunt and collecting and supporting.
Yeah, that's for me personally as somebody who's running a gallery for quite some time and who lives off being an artist myself. It's always I'm always curious to find out how and why people buy art. Especially that,
and how other people sell and make money. And
I think I have a good understanding of how you make. Can make money with this, and for me it's very interesting. If you, it's from region to region, from project to project, it's different. If you go to an art fair in the United States, everybody knows that is a marketplace.
Yeah.
So of course there's a lot of people coming around and just looking at stuff, but you also know that probably every second or third person is a serious potential buyer.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have like gallery openings, and now a lot of these gallery openings have become huge events with hundreds of people.
Yeah, it's like a social thing.
Yeah, like a social thing. And if you some of these exhibitions, if you ask people on the bar having a beer, what's your favorite artwork? They're just like, I don't know,
artwork.
Yeah. So it's like totally different, the approach to so how people get into buying it. And I think telling and hearing. Telling stories about how I buy art, why I bought art, and also telling stories about how other people bought art, like the first artwork somebody bought.
Who's Do you remember the first artwork you
that
bought?
I bought? Wow, that's no, not really. I mean, we've been buying art for a long time. I can't really remember which was the first one. Also because, when you're a young artist, a lot of the art at home in your place is something that you have made or you've traded with somebody.
Yeah, a lot of trades with friends and stuff.
I mean, I come from a time when sketchbooks were big, so you always had your sketchbook with you, and
you had a lot of artists drawing
when you met other people, and then you had a drawing in that, and but I don't really remember. It probably was a print.
Yeah.
I bought it somewhere.
One of the first artworks that I bought was it was at an art student art fair, and it was a drawing of a trash can, and I think it said something along the lines of "It's funny." Spend so much time doing on something that you hate the idea of. I really liked it, just really connected with me, and I was talking with the artist, and I don't think he ever made a sale. So he's like, I don't know what it costs, I don't know, between 20 and 30 euros. It's like, oh, okay, I'll give you 25. And I remember that one was
I got a couple of
my
those,
first real art purchase.
I don't know. In the last 15 years, I buy at other galleries too, of course. But of course, if you have so many exhibitions and work with so many artists, you buy from a lot of your shows as well.
Yeah.
Keep some work that you're really into. But sometimes the only reason why I don't have artworks from all the artists that have shown with Helium Cowboy is...
Because you've been working for 15 years and you've had hundreds of
artists.
Yeah,
but I still, sometimes I think that would be nice to have. But it's impossible because probably the one artwork that me and my wife agree upon buying from that show is the one that we sell the first.
Yeah.
And then it would be about cannibalizing your business of taking out the best works. That's also not just very fair. Also, we have a connection to the artists, hopefully for a long time, and then eventually something may end up on our walls. But also, it would be too much, of course. Yeah.
Just storage.
Yeah. But issue. The prints, for example, I have actually, just to figure out, we have one print we have in our living room. That's actually by Shepard Fairey.
All right.
When I began doing exhibitions, that was also the time when people started to get, people like Shepard Fairey started to get attention. They were not big at that time. They basically grew with us. We all grew big together at the same time, and some remained really big and others just, continued doing their business. or not. And that print is actually, I've never been interested in prints by him, but only that one. And that is a special story because when Henry Rollins turned 50, Shepard Fairey did two prints. And I actually stayed up all night to get that one print. Because I like the photo because it's a time they use for that. It's a time when punk broke. It's a time when I was still young. So there's a lot of memories about that. And Black Flag was a very important band, not just because it was the first band which had a relation to art with Raymond Petitbon, the cover art and the flyer artwork. So that was kind of, that's in my mind. That's part of my history.
Yeah.
So I had to have that print. And especially the special thing about that print is it's signed by Shepard Fairey, of course, and but Henry. Also by Henry Rollins and the photographer.
All right.
And that is, so for me, it's like, it's a fantastic story that print has. And it's, you know, still in our living room. Even though it's an $80 print. But I mean, it cost me a thing up all night to just wait because at that time, you know, so they even made it so that between 4 and 8,
So PM no exact in America, drop time.
Not an exact drop time. So you're basically re-hitting the reload button on your browser all the time, you know?
All night long.
Yeah, all night long. Yeah. So I think if you manage to actually load, have a story for the purchase, then that is very often a good argument.
Of course, I think the story is always the most important. It doesn't matter what the cost is or what the medium is. Like the story and your connection to that story is the most important thing to purchase an artwork. Yeah.
Do we have any? I mean, we're showing in this exhibition 8 artists. Well, mm-hmm. one artist is still caught up in customs.
Yeah, so yeah. 7.5.
7.5. Yeah. He's here with us in mind and spirit and in a print.
Yes, we have his print.
But still, it's that's another topic. We should invite somebody from DHL.
That'd be an interesting talk.
But that is, we have Morky, who is actually shown with us in 2007, I think. We have Tim Biskup, who's shown with us in 2007 only once in group shows. We've always wanted to do something. Let's do something. And then
here we are.
We have with Highland, who I hope to interview tomorrow as well for another podcast, Highland Mather.
Yeah.
He was currently also making a work in Hamburg that remains here at the Überquell Boompop.
Yeah, Highland has become over the years a very good friend of mine. Yeah. When I first moved to Copenhagen, I was with my girlfriend and we were staying in a super tiny apartment, and we invited him to come over and he made a piece in our kitchen.
Okay.
I don't know why, because the kitchen was tiny to begin with, and it was amazing, and we kept a few of the wood pieces and have brought that with us over the years. That was good times. Yeah. So yeah, I've known Highland for years. And we've worked together on different projects, and he's used to run a couple of galleries in Amsterdam. So he has a new one again now, new space. And
he runs Andenken.
And Andenken,
How do you pronounce it?
Andenken. Oh, yeah, the German Andenken. Okay. Yeah. And we've worked together, and we've done a John trip with Evan Heacox. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, he came to the Netherlands. He stayed in Utrecht for his trip. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, he had an exhibition with Highland. So we were able to connect that together. Very glad that he's part of the show here now again as well. Yeah.
Actually, staying in his camper van in the backyard of the gallery here.
True camper life.
Yeah, true camper life. Yeah. That's good. You know, who else do we have in the show? We have Laura Berger.
She is from Chicago. Okay. At least that's where she lives. I'm not sure if she's born and raised in Chicago, but she's from Chicago. She's. I met her a couple of years ago when I didn't meet her personally then, but I think when I was in Chicago to do the show at Vertical Gallery, I fell upon her work, and we were able to do a trip. When was this? I think early last year. And it's been, great success. We did a show with her as well in Los Angeles, where she made a couple of original pieces for that. And she's a joy to work with, and she's got a great following online, very supportive group of people that follow her work. And
we have Kristen Texera.
Yeah, Kristen Texera. She's from New York. But she's all over the place as well. Just last month she had a residency in Arizona, in the States. And she's the one who went to Newfoundland, Canada. Mm-hmm. Actually, talking about exotic locations, when I first suggested locations to her, I think we were talking about Barbados and like tropical islands kind of stuff. Yeah. And she was just like, I don't really want to go there. Like, that's not my thing. Mm-hmm. So we found Newfoundland in Canada, which is a lot more sort of rugged nature, not tropical island life.
Yeah, but I can relate to that.
Yeah, and that's way more up her thing. Mm-hmm. And she had an amazing trip. We like she flew into, I don't know the name of the city anymore, but we rented a car for her, and she was just able to for 4 days just crisscross all over the island, stay at different places, and
She works. She works abstract more than any of the others. Or Walton works.
Well, the last year or so, we've dabbed a little bit more into abstract works like Kristen Texeira, but also Hens, former graffiti artist Alex Brewer, or he's still a graffiti artist, but Alex Brewer from Atlanta. Tim Biskup is working more and more abstract. So, like Vincent de Boer in a way as well,
who's also
part of the show.
Yeah. He's also from the Netherlands?
He's from the Netherlands as well, yeah. He has a strong history and background in calligraphy, but is pushing that beyond letters. And I think that's where it becomes really interesting.
I think it's on his website where he has the brush he paints the work with underneath the image of the work, I think, on his website. I think I saw that on his website.
Could be. Yeah, it could be.
It's like because it's always like very wide brushes that he
produces. Yeah, he has
it's like this calligraphy style.
I was at his studio a couple of weeks ago, and he just has... Yeah, amazing amount of brushes.
Yeah, you know, people like I, you know, so we take pride in the amount of clamps we have, you know, to fix wood, and these people have brushes.
Yeah,
you know?
Talking about, but like, our 10th trip we did with Niels Schuh Milman, Dutch
he's probably
calligraphy.
The most famous one in this calligraphy part.
Yeah, he's like the godfather of calligraphy. He started this 10 years ago and made a whole scene out of it, and he's going to go on a John alumni trip in May.
Okay.
And like, if you come to his studio and the collection, not only brushes, like whatever can hold ink, he'll be like, huh, I could use that. He picked up, like, he goes to garden centers and is like, huh, ink can go in there. It'll come out. Like, I can use that.
Yeah. Especially when you have super wide brushes, you need like buckets, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, do you get to visit artist studios a lot? Just before I go into that, did we forget any artists? Oh, yeah, we forgot A.K.A. Corleone.
A.K.A. Corleone. Yeah, I can't help but pronounce it Corleone. He's a Portuguese and big Godfather movie fan. And that's where A.K.A. Corleone is his graffiti name. Mm-hmm. He went to Sicily, and had to visit Corleone, the city, and the history of the mafia.
Did he paint there?
I think he painted there. Yeah,
that would have been cool.
Yeah, definitely. He painted some like backyard walls and stuff, and derelict buildings and things. Yeah, yeah. Corleone. He had to. Yeah, yeah. So that's all the artists in the show. Yeah,
yeah.
And then artist studios. Yeah, yeah. I tried to. But we work with artists from all over the place right now, so I can't. But usually, like back in last November, I was in San Francisco. And then I try to visit as many art studios and people that I've worked with over the past. And it's also, I think it's sometimes also interesting. I sometimes feel a little bit weird if I don't know the person or I haven't worked with the person yet. So it's like, hey, can I come by your studio and just hang out? And so sometimes I think it's nicer to have worked together already before and then meet the artist. For example, Kristen, like we'd worked before and then I met her last November in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Seems easier in a way, or less awkward, potentially awkward.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of artists that are happy when we do studio visits. You know, it's just not possible all the time because of course distance and stuff like that.
Exactly. Sure. Yeah. And then I have a thing where because I have this project, and if I approach artists from this project out, like I don't want to do that and then decide not to work with them and then be like, oh, like. We do this project and then, we don't want to work with you. I don't know. This feels
so your approach is your mind is set on an artist and then you approach them. So not to create any expectations then.
Yeah. So I'll like if I like an artist that I've never seen or worked with before, like I follow them for a while and look at their work and see what they're doing and if everything goes right, like or if all the puzzle pieces fall into the right place, then and when I see the opportunity to work together, then I'll reach out. But yeah.
Well, any artists you really want to work with that has not gotten back to you or
Barry McGee.
Yeah, okay.
At Templeton. There's a couple of artists on my list. Like those two are like my personal favorites. Mm-hmm. And there's artists that usually everybody replies. Like some don't have the time or like because of the, also again of the price point of our project, like for some artists it's just doesn't relate anymore. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like we offer a trip to wherever they want to go and they don't have to really do anything.
Yeah.
So for some artists it's just a nice free vacation.
Mm. Have you worked with a German artist?
Maybe not.
Well, it's, I mean, the Jaunt is a project that is not ending this year, right?
No,
it's something that you plan to continue for a long time.
I hope to. Yeah, when we first we number all of our trips, and from the beginning on, it's always been three digits, so 001, and now so we've got room for it to go to beyond 100.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So 999.
That may be the max.
Of course, there may be a point where you just say, "Well, God, I'm just, I need to replace that chair."
It's the chair thing.
Yeah. I know. They're old.
Try to bungle my feet in the air.
Yeah, no, that's okay. It's just, you know.
Hopefully, in a way, in some time, like I'll be done with it. Like it'd be nice. I think a project always needs to have an end. Mm-hmm. But we do 10 trips a year now.
Yeah.
We've been working 5, and we'll at the end of this year we'll hit 50. I think we could go up to 100.
You're going
to
celebrate the 50?
One artist has said that if we ever get to 50, then he'll pull in with all the other artists and get me on a trip.
Sure.
I don't know if he still remembers that.
Well, if you're listening. You know, it's a very nice idea, though. I think that's a really nice idea.
There's been one trip where I did join, and that was actually David Schillinglaw.
All right.
We invited him to come to Denmark, and he stayed in my Danish family's summer house.
Oh, nice.
And it's a place where, I don't know, if you're there alone, you'll go crazy, or you won't find the supermarket, and, and you'll starve, and you won't make it back. So I figured it'd be nice as they say in Danish, hyggeligt, to be together. We had a great time. It was like I've seen artists work before, but it was very nice to be part of the creative process and to be
He's a very open guy, so you can actually sit next to him when he paints. So I have to talk you through it at the same time. Yeah, you know, I like his approach to and his
personality. And I think actually like David Schiller, he gets a lot of impulses in and he translates all of that within his head. And that's where I think a lot of his great work comes out because like it's just all over the place. And I think actually at that summer house, like I think he was there for 3 or 4 days. Like he was the most, like you could really tell that the nature and the solitude of the place really brought him down and just really brought it all back to the essence.
Yeah.
And then on the last day we went into town and it was like, oh, wait, great, there's impulses again everywhere. Let's go. So it was really special to witness that as well, the immediate impact that the surroundings had on him and him.
Sorry. I think he's one of actually the artists where it's very, very important that they have these kind of inputs for their work or not important, but it's just part of what he's doing. And
I think what he actually does is translating all the impulses that he has back into his art. You'll see an immediate response.
How successful was his print? Because he's probably got a good followership for
prints. It's sold out by now. Yeah. We didn't sell out all the way. But over, like, I think we sold like 30 or 40 in pre-sale, and then it was sold out by now. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. We have one hanging still in the summer house as well.
Huh. Yeah. Well, you should have a piece of him in the summer house.
Yeah.
Also, he's still very affordable.
But it's also one of the artists that produces so much that if you go, you can't go crazy with the prices, of, and you don't have to. But I think there's some artists where you can say basically there's a shilling law for everyone. Mm-hmm. I think he's producing enough that everyone who's interested in his work can also afford. Well, and of course, he has larger pieces that are more expensive. But I mean, when he was here for his exhibition,
yeah, because he had a solo exhibition here, right?
A solo exhibition here, yeah. He created a lot of new work just here, you know, small pieces.
I think years ago, I was in Hamburg once, and I was maybe trying to find the gallery, and that was around that time, and maybe I didn't find it.
2015.
Yeah, maybe. Because I also remember being at Helium Cowboy once at a totally different space. Mm-hmm. I'm going to describe
it. Yeah, this is our third space. And what we've always done, we didn't call it that then. We always did pop-up.
Because
we did exhibitions at different locations when the artists or the artwork called for it, or when, you know, sort of like we've played in a couple of different spaces.
Did you ever have a space like Black Walls?
Yeah.
Because I think that's why it was.
Okay, but that was not an official gallery.
Okay.
You mean, in 2008, not. That was too early, right, for you? 2008, we had...
That was probably too early, yeah.
Yeah, that was like we had this huge exhibition down at the Bieberhaus at the Hauptbahnhof. That was like 1,600 square meters of an insane place. Insane show, too. But before, when we moved in this place, actually, the construction part was not done when we've already moved out of our old space. And we had a storage space that was quite big and just around the corner and had just black walls and the windows were black. Mm-hmm. And that was basically our address at that point.
Maybe it was that place then.
So we let people in, but it was just nothing. We had two desks.
Yeah.
We had a bar in there and a fridge. And we had all the artwork stored, and at that time we had so much work and storage, because that was 2000, you know, sort of nine. That was like we were still like business was declining rapidly at that point, but the years before it was so huge that we've been shipping artwork around the world all the time. Went to all the art fairs and stuff like that. So, but we used that as a storage facility for some time.
Okay.
And that was actually quite comfortable, but that was for six, 7 months. We didn't have a gallery space.
No, so kind of nomadic gallery.
Yeah, at that time we did three private events in there. Private in the sense that we didn't want to do exhibitions there, public exhibitions there, and create attention for the space because it's just like a temporary, and it was not. I don't think
you didn't want to invest too much time and effort into it. Then
so we did. We had like we have a photographer that I work with. That's Joe Fischer, and he has a project where he invites people to sit at his table, which he carries around with him in the car.
Right.
Always the same setup. So it's a small table, so everybody sits on a chair, and he kneels in front of you and takes that photo from the same perspective, the same background cloth, and the same desk basically. Everybody just comes there and, you know, be yourself and sit on the desk and takes that photo. And he's done hundreds and hundreds of people on that desk. Yeah. We did on that table. Fischer Bitter zu Tisch was the name of the problem.
All right.
Sort of like he invites you to the table. And that project we did in there, but also just like by, you know, word of mouth, you know, sort of. If you knew someone who knew someone.
Yeah.
So that was nice. But not having a space is it's interesting as a gallery day. I mean, these days I know a lot of people who don't have a space.
It creates new challenges.
Yeah, and it was a crazy spot too. But I was, you know, close to this. But then also is, you know, then you are with this space on Google, and until you change Google changes to this place, people won't find you because everybody navigates just you know, by iPhone, smartphone, or whatever. But these days, a lot of people actually take the concept of having a gallery without a space.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, that's sort of the genre. We're like, although we focus mostly on prints, but like a lot of people ask me also, I was like, where are you based? It's like, I don't know, it's not really relevant. I live in Copenhagen, but. When we work with European artists, we print in the Netherlands. When we work with American artists, we print in Chicago. So
so you don't have a little small storefront in Copenhagen?
No, we don't need it either because, I mean, we sell so much overseas.
Yeah,
that,
and like, online, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
That whole question of where are you based, I feel like, becomes more and more irrelevant. And like,
so you work from your home or?
Yeah, got a little home office and
take care of the kids.
Yeah.
While the wife makes the money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good concept.
That's my retirement plan.
Yeah, I think everybody who lives in art should find a spouse that has a real job.
Yeah.
And I don't have to be rich, but at least, you know, something steady.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, well, how to survive with art is a totally different topic. Yeah, although, of course, it always comes up
next week on the podcast.
Yeah, next week on the podcast. How to survive as an artist or as somebody who runs a nice project like the Jaunt. Yeah, I think, is there any other project like the Jaunt? Are there any people that try to make something like this also happen? Because I mean, a big company, a big brand could go, that's a fantastic project. Say you're a sneaker company and then you say, well, that's a fantastic project. Let's do that. It's also cheap and we can refinance it.
Yes, but like as I know right now, there isn't a project quite like the Jaunt. Like I've seen, like years ago, there was a Dutch series of that would send out musicians to like little summer houses, and they would go like three or four musicians and create like a record in a week or something.
Okay.
But like art and print related wise, I don't think there isn't. There's tons of different print projects out there, but a lot of them are just like, well, we just invite artists and we make prints. That's what we do. And I think we have a great unique selling point that makes us stand apart from everything else. But like, I don't see a big brand
maybe approaching you saying, hey, a couple of millions and we take over.
Well,
would you object to that?
No, not really. But what I would be interested in is, I mean, if there's a sneaker brand that wants to do something, I can curate it for you. Like, I'll set it up and then it can be curated by the Jaunt. And I don't know, we send, like, I know people who like sneakers to sneaker factories or whatever. I don't know. Like, besides the Jaunt, like, it's not the only thing that I do, like, to make money. Like, I have my own company, which is like an art agency, and I work with commercial clients and we find the right artist for the right project. And I work together with Unruly Gallery. Gallery in Amsterdam. We're based out of Amsterdam. They're an online gallery from Niels Schumilman. So I have a couple of different projects, which are all still within the art world. So they feed one another, and I get introductions to the one artist here and can use him for this. If you have money and call me.
Talking about quality, the prints, that's kind of, you said there's a lot of people now who have print projects, but your prints are all silkscreen prints?
Yes.
We produce them in Copenhagen?
Hand-pulled silkscreen prints, always in an edition of 50. And when we work with European artists, we print in Utrecht, in the Netherlands, with our printer Joris Dix, who has been with us from the start, and it's been amazing. Because when we work with American artists, there's just a logistic problem of like all the prints are signed and numbered by the artist. So when we have an American artist going to Europe, then goes back, then we need to make the prints and send them to America and back again. And then half of them are sold in the States, so they need to go back again.
Yeah, that's super.
So we started working with a printer in Chicago, Elizabeth Kovac, and she's also amazing, and she takes care of all of our printing from American artists. So then we only have to, it's just easier logistics wise.
Sure. We have reached the magic hour.
Is that an hour already?
Yeah, it's always I have no experience with podcasts except for listening and making a few.
What are some of the podcasts you listen to? Do you know of any good, great art podcasts?
Well, the podcast that I listen to almost everything he does is What the Fuck with Marc Maron. I think he's the god of all podcasters. He's a comedian from America, and not only has he, I think, already 800, 900 podcasts out, he's been doing it for a while. He's also interviewed people such as Barack Obama.
I'm usually not a big fan of like American comedy podcasts.
But he's so good. No, he's not comedy. I mean, he's a comedian, but he's so deep and he's so good. And if I ever am 2% as good as he is in podcasting, then basically I can stop. He's really good. But anyway, that's me being a fan.
Yeah.
Fanboy. A 50-year-old fanboy of a 53-year-old podcast. But no, I like to listen for, I mean, of course, you know, we're going to the football game in about half an hour to St. Pauli. I listen to the Millanton, which is like the podcast that goes before games, after games. Mm-hmm. And then there's like, then these guys sometimes talk for 3.5 hours. But that's nice on the bike. I like to listen, of course, NBA, the starters and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And there are a few... I like to listen to Vantage Point Radio. That's a podcast.
That's a good one. Yeah,
they have always good names. They have good
true.
Access to that.
From Berlin, right?
Yeah. And if it's an artist that I'm interested in, I like to listen to that.
I have that one as well. Actually, that's a good one.
Yeah. So there's a lot out there. I mean, it's probably sometimes difficult to find the right ones for you, but just
it has been something that I've been thinking about the last few months, mm-hmm. of maybe trying to set up like a podcast thing with every artist who returns from a trip.
Yeah.
Because they're over there, wherever they live, and I'm over here.
Well, you can do it for Skype, of course.
Yeah, but the quality and
For me, this is basically one of the backgrounds why I want to do the podcast, and also in this setting, like just the two of us sitting here, not a background of people, not through Skype or anything, not on the road. Just is because we're just talking here, like we've been talking all week when we're setting up the show.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
And there's like an extension of the bar, basically, where we stand and have
a drink. It's not like a Q&A, it's a conversation.
And that's what I like, because I think there's some interest in other people to listen to that as well. But I think if you go beyond 1 hour, it's long.
Yeah. I mean, I easily listen to longer podcasts, but like, maybe it's can't just, listen to it in one setting.
I can talk for hours. Yeah. People will know me, know that.
I mean, it's good that we got the football game coming up, so there is an end point.
Yeah, there's an end point. Yeah, that's true. Well, it's good you came over all the way from Copenhagen on the train that goes on the boat.
The train goes on the boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to tonight and the next trips.
Yeah.
And I can recommend some German artists.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.